Well, let's get into the Word. Numbers chapter 32. If you've been tracking with us through the book of Numbers, or even if you haven't and you haven't been here before perhaps, the children of Israel have been on a journey. As you know, they were delivered out of Egypt, freed from the bondage of slavery that pictures that life in the world of sin. They were freed up. God sent Moses to deliver them out of that place. The picture, of course, is plain. It pictures us and our life of sin, the sinful nature that we were all born into and all exercised freely for so long. Perhaps you're still exercising it. But here's the thing. Israel was freed from that life, given another chance, so to speak. They were taken out of that place by the sovereignty and the power of God. All they had to be willing to do was leave. They just had to be willing to leave Egypt. And as you know, if you've looked at this story again and again, as I have, then you realize that it only took a matter of days to free the children of Israel from Egypt. Unfortunately, it took 40 years to free the Egypt in them from them. They got out of the country, but the country didn't get out of them. They were still Egyptian in their heart in many ways. And, of course, it was a tragedy. It was a shame that they had to wander in the wilderness for all those years because they refused to go into the promised land at the allotted time. When they were given the opportunity to move in, to go further, in that picture of the promised land, folks, is the Spirit-filled life. It's the life that you and I can have if we want to. We can have that abundant life Jesus talked about if we're willing to go in. And so the children of Israel had marched to that place called Kadesh Barnea, which was their first opportunity to go into the promised land. And of course, you know the story. They rejected the idea. They sent some spies in, and the spies came back. All but two of them said, "We cannot go in there because there's giants, there's problems. And, we're going to be eaten up in there. We can't go." And they discouraged the hearts of the rest of the children of Israel, and they didn't go in. Two of the spies, Caleb and Joshua, were encouraging the congregation to go further, to go in, to go deeper, and said, "Hey, it's no problem. We can get in there. We can go, and it's going to be great. The giants will eat them up. They're no problem for us." And so they were gung-ho to go in, to go further. But the 10 spies convinced the rest of those people that it was not going to be possible, that it's not going to work, that it's better to stay in the dry, hot wilderness and march around in the wilderness day after day and complain and murmur. It's better to do that than to go in and get abundant, Spirit-filled life. And of course, we've been looking at this story and we've been looking at these folks and we scratch our heads and we wonder what's wrong with them. And of course, then you take a good look at your life and you go, what's wrong with me? Why do I spend so much time in the wilderness and not very much time in the promised land? Now, as we get to this part of the story, as you recall, the children of Israel were facing all kinds of obstacles. One that they faced, we looked at recently, was Balaam, who was hired by Balak to curse the people and couldn't. I'm abbreviating this, I know, just I got to catch us up to speed here. Balaam tried to curse the people, couldn't because God wouldn't allow him to do so. There, Balaam and Balak, the king of the Moabites, were up on the hills around where the children of Israel were camped, and Balaam's up there trying to hurl curses down and nothing but blessing is coming out. And so, as you know, Balaam finally, in frustration, couldn't curse the people, convinced Balak to set a trap for them, so to speak, and had the children of Israel mingle with the Midianites and the Moabites, those pagan people who invited them to their parties and to their worship services, really, to worship idols and to have these fornicating affairs with them. And they did so, and the people ruined themselves. They cursed themselves because Balaam couldn't curse them. God wouldn't let them be cursed by him. But they were convinced that it was okay. And Balaam's doctrine, folks, was what? That compromise is okay. You can live like an unbeliever even though you're a believer. And Balaam's doctrine taught that. That's what was taught to the people. It's okay for you to do whatever. It doesn't really matter. You're a Christian. Grace covers it. Mercy is going to take care of it for you. And we are grateful for grace and mercy. But Balaam's doctrine declared that it's okay for you to do that. And it is absolutely not. What happened when they bought into that lie, of course, was 24,000 people died as a result of their mingling, their mixing. The sin of those that partook of that caused the death of 24,000 people in their midst. Can I just suggest to you that your compromise will cause death around you? In your family, in your friendships, in your life. Compromise with sin, compromise with the world will cause there to be death. People will be dying around you. There'll be a death around your life. Now, we talked about that at length, but I have to bring us to this point because the children of Israel then had to face the Midianites who seduced them, remember? And so God said, deal with the Midianites. We covered this on Wednesday night. And so they did. They wiped out the Midianites that seduced them, took them out. A picture there, of course, of how we're to deal with the flesh, how we're to deal with that part of our life that tries to seduce us. And no matter who it is, and we talked about this on Wednesday, but it bears repeating, no matter who it is that seduces you into sin, folks, they're the enemy, and I don't care what their name is. I don't care if it's mom, dad, brother, sister, cousin, relative, neighbor down the street who says, come on over, and we're having a big barbecue and suck down a bunch of beers with us and be neighborly. That person is not looking out for your best interest. And God says, listen, don't be seduced by that. Don't be tricked. It's not something that you're to do as a believer. And we look at it and we go, well, wait a minute. Now, you know, let's not get legalistic here. This isn't legalism. Paul says, I'm at liberty to do all things, but I won't be held by anything. And I won't cause anything I do to stumble another. If you live by that, I'll guarantee you compromise is going to have to go. Paul says, heaven forbid that you'd use your liberty to sin and to cause others to stumble and to really cause the Lord to be grieved. You see. So we're at that point now where they dealt with the Midianites. That was kind of something they had to face up to and deal with. And then we come to chapter 32. Where another situation arises, which happens in the body, again, of Christ. The stories that we read in the Old Testament, you guys are well aware by now, are pictures for us to learn from. These are stories, yes, that really happened, for sure, but they're for our learning. Peter says, all these stories are for our learning, so we can learn from them the principles that are pictured back there. So we see that, oh yeah, that really happened. That took place. Mm-hmm. That really did happen there. And that story really was true. But it's for me to learn something else from, a spiritual reality that I need to understand. And something comes up here in chapter 32 that we have to look at because this is going on. This is a problem. This is a situation for many. And here's what takes place as I'll kind of walk through this. Verse 1 says, the children of Reuben and the children of Gad had a very great multitude of cattle. And when they saw the land of Jazer and the land of Gilead, that behold, the place was a place for cattle, the children of Gad and the children of Reuben came and spake unto Moses and Eleazar, the priest, and unto the princes of the congregation, saying, Ataroth and Dibon and Jazer and Nimrah and Heshbon and Eliah and Shebam and Nebo and Beon, even the country which the Lord smote before the congregation of Israel, is a land for cattle, and thy servants have cattle. So Gad and Reuben, the leaders from those tribes, they came to Moses because they had a lot of cattle. And they said, Moses, this land that's here, this land of Jazer, which, by the way, for you guys who know what Israel is looking like present day and how it's laid out, you'll understand that the one side there, the east side of the Sea of Galilee, that northern part of the country, on that one side, that eastern side of the Sea of Galilee, that is this particular territory. So, pretty nice spot. I kind of like it myself. When we were over there, it's one of the places I thought, this is a great place. Rolling hills, pasture land. It's really pretty. That's the land that Gad and Reuben and these tribes that are interested in this land, because they have cattle, they realize this is cattle country, and we've got cattle. So they said, verse 5, if we have found grace in thy sight, let this land be given unto thy servants for a possession, and bring us not over Jordan. Don't bring us into the promised land, because we have cattle. We have lots of cattle, and this land here on this side is better for raising cattle. So don't take us in, Moses. Don't take us over there to that land that's flowing with milk and honey, that spiritual filling place. Leave us here, and we'll make do over here with our cattle, because this is a great place to raise cattle. And Moses, verse 6, said unto the children of Gad and to the children of Reuben, shall your brethren go to war, and shall you sit here? In other words, we've got to go into the promised land and take that territory. There's going to be battles to fight. There's going to be war to be involved with. And are we going to go do that, which is what we were instructed to do by the Lord? Are we going to go fight the battle, and you guys going to sit here? Is that what you're trying to say? Moses was making a case, you see, to these tribes. And so he goes on to say, wherefore discourage ye the heart of the children of Israel from going over into the land which the Lord had given them? He said, why are you going to discourage the rest of the people? Because they aren't going to want to go in. Here's the thing. These guys had a point as far as points go. As far as thinking logically goes, they had a good point. Hey, we've got a lot of cattle. This is prime cattle country over here. But this is something that resembles somebody else's thinking. Back in the book of Genesis, Abraham's nephew, Lot, he had the same thinking, if you recall. Abraham said, you know, we're not getting along, our herdsmen and your herdsmen. Lot, why don't you choose some land and you take it, and I'll take whatever you don't want. And very generous of Abraham. And Lot said, fine. And he looked out, and he saw all the pasture land that was on the borders of Sodom. Sodom was that spiritually dead, wicked, sinful city, you see, is the Las Vegas of Israel at that particular point. So Lot looked at that and said, there's some nice land there for my cattle. And so he chose that. And as you know, he moved closer and closer to Sodom. And then finally, because of convenience and because it was easier for him to operate, he moved right on in to Sodom. Because he walked by sight and not by faith, he wound up in the middle of Sodom. And the Bible tells us he actually sat in the gate of Sodom, which means he became a city councilman in Sodom. Because his decision-making, listen, folks, listen carefully. This is something that is really ignored, I believe. The decision-making for Lot, the decision-making here that Gad and Reuben are making is based upon what they have materially and what will best suit them comfortably. And so their decision has nothing, has zero to do with spiritual application in their life. They're not thinking not only of their own spiritual benefits and welfare, but they could care less about the rest of the children of Israel. Because Moses says, why are you going to do this? And discourage the hearts of the rest of the congregation that's going to look at you, and they're not going to want to go in either. Now, Moses says, verse 8, that's what your fathers did. When I sent them from Kadesh Barnea to see the land, that's what they did. For when they went up to the valley of Eshcol, speaking of the spies, he says, they saw the land, and they discouraged the heart of the children of Israel then, you see, that they should not go into the land which the Lord had given them. Do you know what happened with our fathers, Moses says? The spies went in, they saw all the wonder in the promised land, but they came back and said, no. It's not good. Not good for us in there. Better out here. And the rest of the children of Israel listened and did not go in. Moses says, why are you doing this? This is what the fathers did back then. And the Lord's anger, he said, was kindled at the same time, you see. And he swore, saying, surely none of the men that came up from Egypt from 20 years and upward shall see the land which I swear unto Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, because they have not wholly followed me, except, he says, save Caleb and Joshua. They were wholly following me. They wanted to go in, so they'll see it. They wanted to go in, so they'll see it. They wanted it, and they'll see it. This is something that causes a lot of concern, I think, for us. We are convinced so often that I can't get there spiritually. I can't be in that place spiritually because I just don't have it. I'm not like you. I'm not like them. I don't have that gift. I don't have that ability. I'm not a spiritual giant like you guys. What guys? That's what I'd like to know. Where's the spiritual giants around? I don't see very many of them. I do see, though, people who want it. I see people who want it, and they will get it. Joshua and Caleb, all they said was, let's go. We want to go in. Let's go in. And God says, they'll see it. Rest of you guys, he said, you're not going to see it because you didn't want it. This is something that's really hard for us because we don't have an excuse for not being spiritual. Oh, you can. I'm sure you have them. I have them too. But they don't work. In other words, they're not valid. According to this, according to what God says, your spiritual lack, the excuses that you and I come up with daily, continually, aren't valid. They don't mean anything. They don't wash because God says, you want to be spiritual? You will be. You want to see the promised land? You will. You want to be spirit-filled? You will be. So what's the conclusion you have to draw? If I'm not spiritual, if I'm not walking in the promised land, if I'm not walking in the spirit, what's the conclusion? I don't want to. Well, that's not what I came to hear today. I came with a whole bunch of excuses why I'm not spiritually discerning things or walking rightly. I mean, I got problems. The problem is you don't want to be spiritual. Problem is I don't want to be spiritual. That's why I'm not, oftentimes. God says, because these two guys, they wanted it, they'll see it, you see. But the Lord's anger was kindled against Israel, and he made them wander in the wilderness 40 years. If you don't want it, you'll wander. If I don't want it, I'll wander. It's that simple. It's not a, you know, it's not a big mystery thing where you wonder why I'm wandering. Don't need to ask any further. You're wandering because you want to. No, I don't want to wander. Then you won't. Isn't this great? Isn't this great? Just washes away all that garbage that we put up and put in to our thinking. Oh, yeah, I've got big problems. That's why I'm not spiritual. Oh, yeah, I got cattle. I got a lot of cattle. That's why I'm not spiritual. God says here, well, they're not going to see it. They're going to wander. And behold, he says, you are risen up in your father's stead. In other words, Moses says, you've risen up in place of your fathers who did the same exact thing. And an increase of sinful men you are to augment yet the fierce anger of the Lord towards Israel again. You're trying to bring the rest of the congregation down. No, didn't you say this was a spiritual application for us? Yep. When you and I, and listen, folks, carefully, when you and I decide that we aren't going to be spiritual, we're not going to go deeper, we're not going to go further with the Lord, we're not stepping into the promised land, we're staying on the other side because we've got cattle or whatever it is, whatever excuse, just write whatever excuse you want in that place of I've got cattle or whatever. And know this, when you do that, God says it's not about that in particular, it's not about you in particular, you are attempting in that to drag the rest of the congregation down. Whoa, people say, no, I'm not. I just want to do my own thing. I don't want to take everybody else and drag them down. I just want to, you know, be complacent on my own. I need to say this. You cannot be complacent on your own. Your complacency, your indifference, to the Lord, to the things the Lord wants you to do, that excuse, that thing you're using to not go further, to not go into this place like the Gadarenes were doing, like the Reubenites were doing. These guys, the same thing applies to you and me. It is an attempt, inadvertently, surely, but it's an attempt spiritually to pull everybody else down. Because I can't be complacent by myself. I'm going to cause others to be if I am. You see, this is true, and I can use myself in this because I'm up here. And or I can use you because I'm up here. See, I can use you as an illustration too. It's good to be on the chair. Now, here's the thing. I could be complacent myself and just think, oh yeah, I just don't want to go to church today. Now, what if I did that? What if I said, nah, I got cattle. I got things, you know, I'm tired, I'm worn out, or you know, I think I'll just sleep in, you know, till about noon. Would that be okay? Would that affect anybody else? You see, because you're not doing the teaching in here, you think it's different for you. You think, oh, yeah, I nobody's going to notice. Nobody's going to know if I'm walking spiritually or not. Nobody's going to know if I go deeper or not deeper. Nobody cares. Yes, they do. And yes, it does affect others. And I'm not talking about making sure your attendance at church won't get you a gold star. We don't give those, by the way. Some churches do. Perfect attendance. I mean, there's awards given for that. They have little banquets and they have perfect attendance. You know, Mrs. White never missed a Sunday, you know. But I don't know what that has to do with anything. But here's the thing. You and me, we're not talking about attendance in church. We're not talking about, you know, how many good works people can see you do or anything like that. What we're talking about is your heart for the Lord, your personal relationship, your personal walk with God. Is it right? Is it on fire or is it burnt out? Is it going for it or have you left it? Have you moved in or are you on the border? You see, this is a shame because Gad and Reuben, the rest of these tribes, these guys made it to the border of the promised land and they got that far and wouldn't go any further. And many people do this. They get going and they get right to the edge of where it's going to really turn into a spiritual victory. Their life's going to be fired up. They're really going to go for it. And they just, but I've got cattle. And we want to stay here. Don't bring us in there. And I believe truly that some here, perhaps you, are sitting here today maybe going, no, don't bring us in there. Don't take us in there. We just want to sit over here. Because over here, we don't have to think about, you know, real spiritual things. We can just kind of act like we're Christians and we can be over here and act like we're there, but we're really not there. Now, see, here's the thing. Moses, as you know this story probably already, Moses says to these guys, if you're going to do this, the least you can do is get in and fight for the land with us. And if you want to come back here, if you want to come back, Moses says there in verse 15, for if you turn away from after him, he will yet again leave them in the wilderness and you shall destroy all this people. He speaks of that idea that you're going to hurt other people's walk. And they came near to him and said, well, we will build sheepfolds here for our cattle and cities for our little ones. But we ourselves will go ready armed before the children of Israel until we have brought them to their place. So we'll go with you. We'll leave our kids and our cattle here. And we'll set up a little shelter for them. And we'll go with you, Moses, us guys, us men. We'll fight with you until everything's done, you see. Because verse 10 or 19 says, because our inheritance, the last part, is falling to us on this side of Jordan. We want the inheritance over here. We don't want that, really. And I think there's some honest evaluation that needs to take place in our hearts sometimes where we have to say, you know what, I just don't want to go in there. I want to stay here. Anybody want to stay here when the Lord's ready for us to go to heaven? Any takers? You want to stay? We'll all go to heaven in the rapture, and you can stay. Anybody? I don't want to stay. I don't even want to stay here now. You know, I'm praying the Lord comes quickly. You know, like, now will do, you know. I want to go to heaven because I know that this is not where it's at. You know, some believe that we're living in the kingdom today. My goodness. Wouldn't you be bummed if you found out this is the kingdom? I would. I'd say, man, Lord, what happened, you see? Now, the point is, though, of course, is that some, though, will say, I don't want to, just like these guys. I don't want to go in there. Our inheritance will be here. And so the Lord says, okay, to Moses. He says, tell them it's okay, but they have to go fight. Now, this is an attitude that many people have. Many people have that same type of attitude where they say, hey, if you need something, call me. If you need me to come and do something, just give me a call. I'll come help. I'll come and deal with that with you. I'll come fight with you for that or whatever it might be. You know what I'm talking about? In other words, people say, yeah, I'll be involved. Just call me if you need something. And they come and they help, but they don't dwell there. They don't live there. These guys were willing to go in and help out, but then they wanted to go back to where they came from. This is something that is really hard to handle sometimes for us. It's hard to hear it for me. You know, Jesus said things oftentimes, the Lord teaches things oftentimes that are hard to hear. This is one of them in a sense. What's wrong with only going in and helping out and not staying there? Well, as we see here, the people are discouraged. People are discouraged by that. Moses says, your fathers did the same thing. You're just following in their footsteps. It pictures, doesn't it, tradition. Have you ever been involved with churches that are steeped in tradition? And you see what they're doing, you go, wow, that's interesting that they do that. And have you ever asked anybody in the church, why do you do that? Why do you do that thing? And oftentimes you'll hear, well, because we've always done it that way. Okay, but how come? I don't know. We've always done it that way here at, you know, first such and such or whatever. We've always done it. We've done it that way for 200 years. Okay, but they don't know why they do it. Do you know why they do it? Tradition. We've always done it that way. Well, it may have been a good thing 200 years ago, but maybe it's not the thing to do now. Do you understand? In other words, tradition can keep people from going further. Because if you all of a sudden say, well, wait a minute now, I know you've always done it this way, but this way stinks. They'll say, what? We've always done it. You just have no place to be here at all. You just leave my church and never come back. Okay? Now, I'm not saying traditions are all bad, but if they keep you from growing spiritually, get rid of it. If people walk in to the church and they hear a pipe organ that scares everybody to death, then get rid of it. If you see people's face when the music starts and they're going, get a clue. You're scaring them. I'm not picking on pipe organs. I don't want people getting the wrong idea. But here's the thing. Traditions can keep you from growing. These guys were in the tradition of their fathers, and look what they were doing. They weren't allowing the growth. They weren't going to go further. They weren't going to go deeper. It was discouraging to the others, you see. So sad. They made it to the border, but they wouldn't go in. Fought for a while. They're willing to go in and fight, but they weren't willing to dwell. They weren't willing to stay there. Walking by sight, you see, and not by faith. And Moses says this is upsetting to the Father. It upsets God, this attitude that affects everybody else, you see. And they were out for themselves. They weren't thinking about anybody but them. And that's what I do as well. When I decide, hey, I don't care if I grow. It's not me that I'm really affecting. I'm affecting my wife. I'm affecting my kids. I'm affecting you. I'm affecting neighbors. I'm affecting all kinds of people that I may not even realize I'm affecting. My decision to quit growing, my decision to quit going in further, deeper, and all the rest causes everybody around me to be affected. And I can show you discouraged church after discouraged church because nobody wants to go. And the whole body's discouraged. Everybody's beat. Everybody's down. Everybody looks grumpy. They have a right to be grumpy. Nobody's growing in the Lord. You got to go for it if you want to grow, you see. So often, the things that we think are going to pan out, the worldly pursuits, the cattle or whatever it might be, they weigh so heavy on us spiritually. They distract, they detract, they destroy our spiritual discernment, our walk, and our desire. They had cattle. I know a bunch of believers. I know a bunch of Christians that are abundantly wealthy materially, physically. And I'll tell you, many times they're spiritually broke. They're bankrupt spiritually. They have a lot of material wealth, but many times it's just a big distraction. Keeps them from going deeper, you see. So, what did this decision bring about? Not only did it discourage the people, but secondly, it caused the Gads and the Reubenites, those guys, it caused them and their kids and their descendants to be affected in an adverse way as well. Not only did others get affected in an adverse way, discouragement and all the rest, but others did. If you flip over to Mark chapter 5, the Gospel of Mark, we see something here. Not only did these guys follow in their father's footsteps and cause the same thing, discouragement, but watch what happens here. In Mark chapter 5, verse 1, a familiar story, perhaps, for most of us. It says when Jesus and the disciples had kind of finished up, Jesus had just stilled a storm on the Sea of Galilee. They arrived on the other side, on the east side of the Sea of Galilee. Do you guys recall what the east side of the Sea of Galilee was just a few minutes ago? The Gadarenes, the Reubenites, they settled there. And they came across, and it says, verse 1 of chapter 5, they came over into the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gadarenes, or the area of Gad. This is where they settled. The Gadarenes, this is where they camped. This is where their property was. This is where their cattle were going to be. We've got cattle. We need to raise our cattle here. And when Jesus and the boys came out of the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit. Well, imagine that. The first thing that Jesus sees and these disciples see when they get off the boat on the other side where the Gadarenes were, where the tribe of Gad and Reuben had settled, the first thing they see is a dead man. He's a demon-possessed man living in the tombs. No doubt a descendant of Gad. Interesting. But that's not all. There's more. He had his dwelling in the tombs, and no man could bind him, and so forth. And it goes on to say that Jesus cast out that demon. You know this story. I'm not going to take the time to talk about the whole thing. But what's interesting to me is that Jesus, when he cast out the demons, the devils, all of them, remember the name of that demon was Legion, because there were many, so there was many demons in this guy. And the devils besought him and said, send us unto the, what? The swine. The pigs. Now, you don't have to be a Jewish scholar to understand that pigs were unclean, right? You don't mess with pigs. You don't go near pigs. You certainly don't raise them. And it says here that the demons asked to be sent into the pigs, that they could enter into them. And so Jesus said, okay, go ahead. And the unclean spirits went and entered into the swine, and the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. And they were about 2,000 and were choked in the sea. So, amazing sight. A couple of thousand pigs all of a sudden get infiltrated by a legion of demons. Go running down the hill and jump into the sea. Wow. Amazing. But not as amazing as this. They, verse 14, that fed the swine fled and told it in the city, in the country of the what? The Gadarenes. And they went out to see what it was done. So all the people come out of the town. And they came to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion, sitting and clothed in his right mind. And what? They were afraid. So what? They weren't afraid of the guy before? When he's sitting there in the tombs, cutting himself and shouting and foaming at the mouth, they weren't afraid of him then, but now they come, they see him, he's in his right mind, he's sitting there, normal, cleansed, washed, delivered, free, and they get afraid? They were afraid hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years before. Back in Numbers chapter 32, they were afraid of the same thing. Spiritual reality. They were afraid of spiritual reality back then, and now they can put up with a guy who foams at the mouth and sits there and cuts himself all day and acts like a madman. But when he's in his right mind, freed up, delivered, filled with the Spirit even perhaps, then they're afraid. Woo! What did you do to him? They were afraid of spiritual reality still after all those years. And they that saw what happened to him, verse 16, that was possessed with the devil, and also concerning the pigs, they began to pray to Jesus, depart out of our coasts. These that were previously afraid, back in Numbers here, those that were previously afraid of spirituality, their descendants were as well. Their kids, grandkids, great-grandkids, on and on and on. Their descendants were, again, afraid of spirituality. Their fathers were, they were, and now their descendants are. What a tragedy that fear of spiritual growth would lead to these people's cattle turning into pigs. Oh, we have cattle. We can't do it. We've got cattle. We've got too much stuff. We've got too much commitment. We've got too much other things that we have to attend to. We've got too much to be spiritual. We just don't have time right now. We can't do it. I've got too much going on here. Well, make no mistake of it, the cattle you have, the excuse you're making is nothing more and will turn into nothing less than a pig. Something that is unclean. And for some of us, there's a lot of stuff that would not seem otherwise to be unclean that is unclean because it keeps you from growing spiritually. And anything that does that is a pig. And it will keep you from growing. You will be afraid of spiritual reality, just like these people. Isn't that an awesome thing to see? You just go, wow, what an amazing deal that is. Their cattle turned to pigs. You see, they were so detached and distracted when they saw Jesus after seeing this madman delivered, after seeing all that, they get afraid and ask Jesus to leave where they are, leave this place, leave our coasts, or in literal rendering, the coasts mean leave our borders. We came to the border of the promised land, and this is where we're staying. And then Jesus came to them, and they asked him to leave. There's a decline that takes place spiritually when you're afraid to grow spiritually. You can't stay the same. We've talked about this on a number of occasions. There is no neutral ground. There's no neutral in the drive shaft, so to speak, of the Christian walk. There's forward, and there's reverse. So put it in drive or put it in reverse, but there's no neutral. We want to believe there is because we want to live there. And if there was such a place called neutral, you would live there. I would. You're trying to live there now. The problem is that you're not. The problem is I'm not. There is no neutral. So if you think you're in neutral, guess where you really are? In reverse. You've got the drive line in reverse. There is no neutral. So if you think you're in neutral, you're in reverse. These guys thought, we can just get to the border and hang out there. We'll be in neutral. What happened? In reverse they went, and their cattle turned to pigs. It's what happened with you and me. It's such a truth that you can't deny it, obviously. If you do, you're messing with the word. But it's something that causes me to go, oh, man. So, Lord, this whole way I think normally, this whole mentality I have commonly, it's wrong. And I'm not going to put pressure on you to grow spiritually. However, I will say this. If you think that you can come to church on Sunday and do some kind of obligation to the Lord and be okay with that, probably another church for you. Because you're not going to be comfortable here. You're not going to be able to sit here and go, ah, this is nice. Finally, neutral. I finally found a neutral place. Don't say anything, you know, that'll cause me to get a concern. Oh, spiritual reality? Uh-oh, I'm afraid of that. You see, that that may be, you know, what you find yourself doing here. And again, folks, I'm not saying, you know, leave if that's you, but you might find yourself very uncomfortable here. It may be an uncomfortable place, and I don't want you to be uncomfortable. I want you to grow spiritually as the Lord does. But I'm not here to tell you what you want to hear. I'm not here to give you what you want. I'm here to tell you the truth. And if you're not growing, you're shrinking. If you're not going forward, you're going backwards. And the excuse, the cattle, whatever it might be, is going to turn into a pig. It's going to stink. It's going to become something dead to you. Now, with that light tidbit out of the way, interesting thing is that in Mark's story, remember now that the people told Jesus to leave. Remember? The amazing thing is, if you haven't flipped back, I'll just read it to you. Amazing thing is when they told him to leave, you see, he did. He got in his boat and started heading out. Howbeit, the possessed man, the man that was delivered, he came and wanted to go with Jesus. Don't leave me here. What a contrast. Those people, we just want to stay here. And we want to be on the border. We don't want to go anywhere. The possessed man who was delivered, who actually saw spiritual reality, who saw Jesus, who really had an encounter with Jesus Christ, went running after him and said, no, Lord, don't leave me here. I don't want to stay here anymore. What an amazing thing. And Jesus says something that blows my mind. Jesus suffered him not, didn't let him come, said this, go home to thy friends and tell them how great a things the Lord hath done for you and hath compassion on you. This is the first missionary recorded in the Bible. Jesus said, go back, go tell Gad, go tell the Gadarenes what happened to you. Be the first real witness they have to the reality of Jesus. And this guy pleading with Jesus, take me, Lord, take me. As so often I find myself saying, even as I said earlier, I'm praying that the Lord would come and take us quickly. Come, Lord, don't leave me here. Don't leave us here, Lord. Come get us. Come take us. he would say the same thing. No, stay here for now and tell him. Tell him. So I'm telling you. And I want you to tell everybody else that you know. I want you to tell your friends. I want you to tell your neighbors. I want you to tell your family. Tell them it's a reality. It's not some game. It's not some little thing that we do on Sunday mornings or on Wednesday nights. This is reality. Have you seen Jesus really? If you have, if you've really encountered Jesus Christ, then you will be saying, Lord, let me come with you. Where are you going? Are you going over there? Because he was heading back to the other side, the promised land. He was heading into where those people had refused to go. And that man in the tombs was saying, let me go with you. Let me go in there. And Jesus said, you're going to be used right here for now. An amazing thing. The obvious implication is this man got saved. He wasn't just delivered from that demon possession physically. He wanted to go with Jesus. Isn't that the real evidence that someone's saved? Isn't it the real evidence, folks, that someone's saved if they want to go deeper? Spiritually want the reality rather than the game? Spiritually want transformation, not a masquerade? That's the truth of the matter. And when we start to get it, we'll start to grow. And if you want it, you can have it. If you don't, you won't see it. I see, I hear what I want to. That's why God told Isaiah, go tell them the truth, Isaiah, but they won't hear you. Because in having eyes, they will not see. In having ears, they will not hear. Having understanding, they won't understand. And whatever cattle you have, understand, it's not an excuse that holds up. It just doesn't. Where are you today? I wrestled through this, going through this study. I wondered, I think so often we've been dealing with a similar reality to this for a while now. But I got to tell you something, folks. The book of Numbers is that way. That's what this is about. This particular book is about whether or not you're going to hang back or whether you're going to go for it, whether you're going to stay on the border, whether you're going in. And if you want to see it, you will. If you don't, you won't. And if you want to go, you can. If you don't, you're not going to go. And nobody's going to force you. And nobody's going to cause you to feel ashamed about it. The Lord might convict your heart, as he does often. But here's the thing. I want you and me. I want us. I want this church to be such a spirit-filled, impacting church that we're all running after Jesus, saying, Lord, we want to come with you. We don't want to stay here anymore. I don't want to stay here. I'm sick of pigs that I thought was cattle. I'm tired of making excuses. I'm tired of that. I just want you, Lord, show me the reality that you have for me and let me come with you. Let's go for it, you see. And I just want you to pray about this. I want you to pray about where you're at and where do you want to be. Because after many hundreds of years, the Gad tribe had not stayed the same, but had declined to the point where they actually told Jesus to leave. We'd rather have pigs. And I know that you're probably not in that particular place, but make no mistake, folks, you've got to go forward. You can't stop. And you ought not to be where you were 5 years ago spiritually. You shouldn't be where you were even a year ago. You should be further. You should be deeper. you should be more discerning. You should have less sin in your life. You should have more joy in your life and on your face. You should have more life in that existence of yours. You should be fuller, richer. You should be one who talks about Jesus more, not less. You should be talking about cattle and pigs less and about Jesus more, not the other way around. We should be making less excuses and enjoying Him more and more. Do you follow me? And if you're not doing that, if you're not enjoying Him more, then you've gone backwards. And I don't want that for anybody, especially for you, this congregation, this church. In your walk with the Lord, the more you tune in, the more you come and say, hey, I'm going to be in the Word. I'm going to be in worship. I'm going to be in prayer. I'm praying for those people. I'm going to quit talking about them, and I'm going to start praying for them. That will affect everybody around you. Quit being a discourager and start encouraging people's hearts, you see. Your walk personally with the Lord. You spend time with prayer on your knees. Spend devotion in that time with the Lord, and you'll find that others in this church are encouraged automatically. You don't even have to say a word to them. But on the other hand, if your walk with the Lord personally, I'm talking your personal walk with the Lord, if it starts to become complacent, indifferent, and all the rest, it will affect others, and you will watch and see people being discouraged around you. And you'll wonder what's going on. What's going on is right here. I got complacent, and now I can see it on the faces of people around me. Well, I don't want that responsibility. Nobody asked, you know, me if I signed up for that kind of a deal when I became a Christian. Am I my brother's keeper? Yep. Sisters, too. You are, in a very, very profound way, interlinked. We are a body. And if I stub my toe, my mouth screams. And if somebody in this church is doing something that is going to cause there to be pain in the body, the whole body knows it. Oh, not that it's going to be exposed, perhaps. But everybody feels it. Paul said to the church as he wrote to them, he says, do you feel hurt and I don't have pain? Do you think that you're going to go through something and I don't feel it? Of course not. I can tell. And I can tell how you're doing. You can probably tell how I'm doing. We can see it in each other. I can walk up to a person, I can talk to a sister or a brother, and I can look at them and I can see how they're doing. And inadvertently, somewhere in the conversation, many times it'll come out. I just really haven't been walking with the Lord. Take it personal. Take it personal. You, all of us, we're all part of the same body, and you affect me, and I affect you. Love God with all your heart. Love Jesus. Follow Him. Want to go with Him. And the rest of those around you, you'll find groups of you will be doing it. Numbers of you will be doing it. Everybody's going to say, let's go get with Jesus now. Okay, let's do it. Let's do it, because we want to. You know, I want to meet Joshua and Caleb. I want to meet those guys. How you guys doing, man? It's good to see you. You wanted to go. What about the other 10 spies? Yeah, no. Isn't that funny? You can always remember Joshua and Caleb's name. Who are the other 10? Anybody got a clue? Can you remember any of their names? I can't. The only ones who remember are the ones that went for it, you see. Interesting. Pray this in, will you? Give it your consideration in your heart, because this is really important. I want to see us just really grow and go and be full of the Spirit. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the truth of the word and how amazed we are at the applications, Lord, that are in these stories and the pictures that are there. I just look forward every time, Father, to seeing again what you would say. And to show us, Lord, these things is mercy and grace on your part. We know, Lord, that we in and of ourselves would become very complacent, very distracted. There's too much in this world, Lord, that would take our attention away. But Father, help us from being discouragers. Even as Moses declared unto those tribes, why do you discourage the congregation by wanting to stay here and not go further? Forgive us, Lord, for that. But stir us, Lord, today. Stir us up that we might be those that would go for it and really, truly understand that spiritual reality shouldn't scare us, but that dead life should really trouble us. So, Lord, keep us and watch over us, but, Lord, keep growing us. Keep causing us, Lord, to see the truth in your word and not to become complacent or indifferent. I just thank you for this church. I thank you for these folks. I pray over their lives. I pray over their families. I pray over the things, Lord, that they are involved with, that they would find themselves enjoying you today and the rest of this week and on through the rest of their lives, that you would come first and everything else, Lord, would be a distant, distant second to what they have in you, that reality. So bless you for that. And as we're just praying, I just feel led today while we're just praying together. If you just feel like, man, I have been so complacent. I've got cattle. I've got junk. I've got stuff. And you know what? This is true, and I want to go. I want to be that man who runs after Jesus and says, Lord, take me with you. And I just want to pray for you if that's where you're at today. I just want to just lift that up to the Lord. And so if you're here, your heart's been kind of complacent, just lift your hand up if you would. I just want to pray over you. Yeah, God bless you. God bless you. Yeah, all over the place. God bless you guys. Yeah, God bless you. Good. I see you all back there. Yeah. Good. Anybody else? Just your heart is just pounding right now because you want to follow. God bless you. I see you there. Yeah. Great. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I see you over there. Good. I see you, little guy. Yeah. Great. Excellent. Let's pray. Father, I thank you for the hands and the hearts, Lord, because I know if those hands went up, then they want to go. They want to be a Joshua and a Caleb who want to go in, and they will see it. They will see the promised land. They will see you in that reality. I'm so grateful, Lord, for those that want to do that. And I know many people in this place, Father, that have not, Lord, perhaps wandered off too far. For any of us, Lord, including myself, I would raise my hand and say, Lord, help me to be centered and focused on your Son. That, Lord, in my heart, in any way, I would never say to him, please leave my coasts. Please leave this border where I'm at because I'm on the edge, but I don't want to go in. Lord, prevent us, stop us. Lord, move in our lives in powerful ways to keep us, Lord, fixed on Jesus, that we would go for it in such a way that this church, Lord, would just be beaming and, Lord, glowing with the goodness and grace of Jesus, and that we would see the Spirit of God move powerfully through this place. Thanks for being patient and understanding, Lord, but we know your heart for us is deeper, walking in a way, Lord, that is just closer to you, and in every way, Lord, pleases your heart. So bless this church. Bless those that lifted up their hands, Father. I pray for strength for them, for their hearts to be centered on you today. Bless, Lord, your word. May we apply it to our lives. Thanks for being patient and loving. God bless us, Lord. Help us, Father. Give us more of Jesus. And, Lord, truly, let us be a people of God. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.